This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we're celebrating the food culture of South Carolina with its chef ambassadors.
Oh, I'm super excited that it's soft shell crab season. Those little suckers are delicious.
People think, oh, tomato is a tomato. No, there is a good tomato and a bad tomato. So when they come to Hampton or even, you know, even in South Carolina, you can really find incredible ingredient.
We started getting lettuce from Micro Leon Farms in Conway. It's a super sweet family that runs that little farm.
Tune in to Meat & Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Kazumasa Nishikawa, who is the fourth generation of Iemoto, or the headmaster of Nishikawa School of Japanese Kabuki-style dancing, which has a history of 170 years. He's a dancer, producer, and director, creating numerous performances, teaching at four colleges. He's also manager of the Nihon Odori Sports Science, a health program from the perspective of Japanese dance. Kazu is based in Aichi Prefecture, which is known for its distinctive food culture. Located between Tokyo and Osaka, its capital, Nagoya, may sound familiar to some of our listeners, but Aichi has not been discovered enough by most of us. So today we'll discuss Kazu's interesting international background, why Japanese dance is good for your health, Aichi's fascinating food products such as umami-rich miso and soy sauce, popular free breakfast programs in Nagoya, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now let's start our conversation with Kazumasa Nishikawa. Hello, Kazu. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for staying up so late. It's 11 something at night in Japan.
That's quite all right. I'm gonna be awake. I can smell the morning air from New York.
Okay. Mm. So right now you are in Aichi Prefecture. We're gonna talk about it in details.
Exactly.
But
yes.
So where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm from the central part of Japan, which has all kind of food. I grew up in the urban area, and so I don't eat sushi all the time. I ate a lot of Western foods, Chinese, Indians, and all kind of international foods. But also, this part of Japan is called very famous for thick and rich taste. And very like straightforward taste, which I heard that a lot of people from the world thinks that some Japanese food doesn't taste anything, the food from the central Japan has a very straightforward flavor, which is very enjoyable internationally, and I grew up with that kind of taste.
Right. Yeah, it's so very lucky because I'm from Tokyo. And by the way, you know, you said you didn't eat sushi every day because
right.
Japanese people don't eat sushi every day. That's like my totally a misunderstanding. And I think American people tend to eat way more raw fish and then they tend to accumulate more mercuries and the stuff. So that's very important. Okay. And then so you speak perfect English.
Thank you very much. Well, I I'm not perfect at all, but I may sound a little bit like perfect-ish because I went to international school since I was in kindergarten, and I had an American teacher all the time. I grew up with American educational system, and I went to New York for college. So that's where I picked up this kind of accent.
Right. So your parents are more into international, like global culture. That's why, because, you know, we're going to talk about it, but your family has traditional dancing, you know.
Yes, yes. Uniquely, my father was into very international. He liked to travel over the world, and but they don't speak English at all. They just thought like, ah, it might be cool to have English speaking son, and they put me into international school.
Wow, amazing. So, all right, and then now let's tell us about your work. So what is the Nishikawa School of Dancing, and what is the history of your family?
Okay, what we do is called Nihon Buyo. Nihon is Japan, Buyo is dance. And as you said, it's a kabuki style dancing. It's very classical. This type of dancing has a history of about 400 years. And our family, our company, has a history of 170 years in this business, which is long, but not too long in Japan, because there are a lot of company which has a history of 1,000 years. So, and this type of dance, we dance in the white makeup in kabuki style, and we give a little like strange voice, like non to ka ko wo to ka, and it gives this very unique kind of voice. And we do the plays. We have stories. Our dance is not like 5 minutes long, but it could be like 60 minutes long. It's more like ballet, and combining with opera in Japanese style.
Right. Yeah. So actually, I watched a fascinating video about your family and family history and actual performance by you on YouTube. And so I'll add the link to the show notes. But I'm not the biggest fan of kabuki or any kind of traditional dancing, but I was fascinated. And
Great to hear that. Thank you.
Right. So, okay. And then your family organizes annual performance events called the Nagoya Odori. So what is Nagoya Odori, and what is the origin of the event?
Okay, Nagoya is the name of the city, my city, and Odori means dance. So it's like Nagoya dance. It's like New York Philharmonic Orchestra. The origin is in our city, and we've been working with this performance for about 75 years. We have started this performance when the World War II was ended. And in Japan, Nagoya was totally burnt out at that time, and nothing was there. People wanted to have an entertainment. And my grandfather has started this performance for 3 days, and we just did a short program, but people loved it, and we decided to do it annually. It's not just a classical, but we always try to do a modernization of the classical dances with a story, with a comedy, a lot of fun. So I guess that's why we are still having this performance for more than 70 years.
I saw it in the video that I mentioned earlier. So the very beginning of this dancing, can you maybe tell us about the interesting episode? Your grandfather was practicing on the street.
Yes. So while during the World War II, we were the dance company, so we were ordered to do the performance for the soldiers in the hospital or in the base, and we were performing for a while. And then, of course, our studio was burnt out, and so we didn't have any place to practice. My grandfather had decided to do the practice in the middle of the city, and we didn't have to use electricity. We always had the instruments, and some of the players played the music, and some of the dancers started to dance, and the people started to stop on the street to watch the dance, because it was during the war and it was banned to have any kind of music or entertainment that time. So people, the huge crowd was made in the center of Japan because where my grandfather was dancing, and while they were dancing, my grandfather starts to think, maybe it was not a good idea to dance because it was war. And when the dance has stopped, because grandfather was worried that somebody might throw a rock at him, you know, because it's not proper. But after performance, the people started to throw things, and grandfather thought, oh no, I shouldn't have, it was a bad idea. But actually it was a tip. It was money that people were throwing, and people were saying like, thank you for the performance. And that's the beginning of Nagoya Odori.
Hey, it's amazing how dancing can make people's lives much better, happier.
Oh yeah.
And I heard that while that was happening, even the streetcar stopped to watch the performance.
Yes, yes, the streetcar stopped, car was stopped, train stopped. Everyone was watching. In dances, you know, in anywhere, in any part of the world, if there's the music, if you start to move with the music, it's a dance, and everyone loves the dance.
Right. One time I watched a little, you know, like a YouTube video, and then kids, he's 2-3 years old, and then people dance, and then the natural movement comes out. Nobody told him how to dance, but, you know, because everybody's moving. So it's just the nature of us. We tend to forget.
Yes. We don't have to learn to dance. We just dance.
Right. And then, you know, you are also a manager of the Nihon Odori Sports Science and Health Program. So what is the program? How can Japanese dance contribute to our health?
Okay, my father, who had passed away last year at age of 81, he was a very strong man. He was very energetic, but he had a heart attack when he was on 53, and he had an operation. And during that time, 30 years ago, the medical system is a little bit different from now. Now, when we have the operation, we have to have an exercise. We try to prevent the decay of the muscle strength or anything. But during that time, the patient had to be patient all the time, and we couldn't move. So all the patients got so weak. My father got weak, and he thought that he will never be able to recover. And at that time, rehabilitation is not so popular. The physical therapy are not so popular in Japan. So doctor said, "Well, it's over for you. You know, it's the time is over. You have to stay in the bed all the time." But it was wrong. My father have decided to be back on the stage. He started to practice, and his health have recovered. And 10 years after that, he have started to work with actual scientist who studies the physical studies. And And then we found out that our type of dance can contribute to the for the health, to increase muscles and have an aerobic exercise, and it will revives you. So we have to created a new type of dance exercise, which is called NOSS, N-O-S-S, Nihon Odori Sports Science.
Wow. So sorry for your loss, because he was in the video, right, that I mentioned earlier.
Yes, yes. But he died healthy. He died suddenly. He died in a very good health condition, and which he wanted to be like that. When my father have talked to Dr. Yuasa, which is a very famous scientist who worked with great figure skate dancer called Asada Mao-chan, and she is the Olympic athlete, This doctor told him that if you want to die easily, you need a good health. You need to be healthy to die easy. In Japan, it's called pimpin korori. Pimpin means very strong, and korori is like sudden die. Doctor urged my father to dance all the time, and therefore he became very energetic person again. And late 20 years, he was very healthy, and then he died suddenly. So family was shocked, but I'm very sure that he's happy.
Wow, that's a huge lesson. And in the video, he was such a, you know, very handsome, very energetic.
Thank you.
His skin was perfect. And I was like, wow. So I have to learn and try to learn more. Like, stay healthy and then ping-ping.
Just dance, right? Dance. Yeah, and work and dance.
Okay.
That's going to work, yes.
Right. All right. So maybe I'll sign up for your class or something.
Yeah. You don't have to learn. You just dance, and any type of dance will work.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So maybe I'll look up on some YouTube videos this afternoon.
Yes, yes. Just mimicking is fine. Just mimicking with the dance video. It's fun.
Right. Mm-hmm. Going back to the rehabilitation part of it, because rehabilitation sounds like it's a effort and challenging task, but then it's dancing, it's fun, and you want to do it. So
that's... Yes. Even though I'm a dancer, I went to the grad school to learn the rehabilitation, and I went to medical grad school. And therefore, I have to say that everyone has to exercise is the key for your health. You have to move all the time.
Right.
And dance is a good opportunity for you.
That's a big lesson. Okay, yeah. So we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll dive into Aichi's super unique food culture. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick. with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Kazumasa Nishikawa, who is the fourth generation Miyamoto, or the headmaster of Nishikawa School of Japanese Kabuki-style dancing, which has a history of 170 years. And he's from the Aichi Prefecture that has unique food culture. So, well, let's talk about Aichi's food culture.
Yes.
And So, first of all, where is Aichi exactly, and what advantage does the prefecture have in terms of geography?
Okay, it's in right in the center of Japan, between Tokyo and Osaka. And the advantage is that it's very close from Tokyo and Osaka, so two major big cities of Japan, which has a very different cultures. So all kind of information gathers into the center of Aichi, and that's the advantage, I think.
Mm, right, that's why it's also one of the biggest industry hubs. Like it has Toyota and many other. Other industries.
Mitsubishi, the aircraft were made in Aichi also. So it's a lot of factories and makers, yeah.
Mm. And the other thing is that Aichi is also known for the birthplace of great samurais. Mm-hmm. So could you name some of the famous samurais from Aichi?
Okay, Oda Nobunaga, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, Tokugawa Ieyasu. Those are the three legends, major samurais in Japanese history, which have created the shogunate and created the peaceful 250 years of Japan. And before that, Japan is like United States, believe it or not. It was like different states, but they are all the different countries. So Aichi is the name of the prefecture. Gifu is the name of the prefecture. All of them were the different countries, and they were fighting all the time. And these three legends have created, had a concept that we can make one nation, and they have united Japan into one nation. And I think that's the big game change in Japan.
Right. Yeah, without these three gentlemen, I think the Japanese history would have been very different.
It would be. Yeah.
For the worse.
No, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that these three men came from the same area where you are from too. So that means like they have a strong personality or something like that relates to personal characteristics?
Well, the thing is that this is not the Miyako, this is not the capital. The capital was in Kyoto for a long time. Sometimes it was in Kamakura or Nara. And it's not even, in modern days, it's not Tokyo. So it's a country, it's not the real urban place. And it's kind of conservative to live in this area. So the rules and traditions are very strict. People want changes, but they can't change. In that kind of place, grew tomato in a very dry land, that this tomato will be very sweet. It's like this in this dry area. Sometimes the very strong character can born in this place, and which has the power to change the whole thing. Like Ichiro is from Aichi.
Right. So hardworking, upward looking, and that's I really love that. the way you described as tomato, so very concentrated, strong personalities.
Yes, yes. Right.
Yeah, and you said earlier the food tend to be thick and rich, so the, probably right. It's related to that strong.
I think so.
Yes. Characteristics. Okay, and then so Aichi has very unique food products, and of course one of them is very famous Hachō miso. So what is Hachō miso, and what is special about it?
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but miso should be, most of the miso are made from either mugi,
right.
Wheat,
barley,
and rice too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
I heard 80% of miso we're talking about is the rice miso.
Rice miso.
Yeah.
But this Hachō miso are made from beans. And the difference is that you can cook this miso like stew. You can boil it, but in rice miso, you will lose the flavor. But if it's bean miso, the flavor will be rich. So I think it kind of characterizes our food and our characters. If you cook them, and it will be rich. And I think that's what is so special about it.
Right. So Hachō miso, by the way, it looks very dark and thick.
Yes.
And it's very distinctive. And at the base, I think every miso has to be made first with soybeans as a foundation. And then you add other ingredients. But Hachō miso is only made with soybeans. Yeah. So it's very thick and like more protein than rice or barley. So that means more umami in it, because amino acid is converted from so protein. So so if you go to Aichi, you can't miss it. And then you can buy Hachō miso, or people call it mame miso. Mame miso is soybean miso, but Hachō miso is one of the names of Hachō miso as a brand.
Yes, Hachō, it means the eight blocks of the neighborhood. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Around the castle. So it was made in the place called Okazaki, where the Tokugawa Ieyasu, one of the three legend samurai, was born. And those bean miso was used for the food that you carry to the war. So it became very popular.
Right. Yeah, interesting. So it's thicker and kind of like long-lasting. They tend to be aged longer, like 1 to 3 years. That's why it's harder and then darker and firmer. Right.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. That's a shogun-related miso.
Yes,
I didn't
it is.
Know that.
Yes.
So another famous, right? And well, it's also important because it's used for the war, but also it's high-quality thing tend to be served to those important lords. So
exactly.
And you can buy Hachō miso, of course, outside Aichi Prefecture, in Tokyo or Osaka or whatever. So
I hope you can buy it in New York too.
I don't know. I have to look.
I never found it when I used to live there. But
really, wow.
Yeah.
I will investigate, because I feel like eating it now so badly. And then another famous product from Aichi is tamari shoyu. So what is it, and what is special about it?
So shoyu is a shoyu sauce or soy sauce, and the tamari is the thickest soy sauce. And just like miso, everything will be thick and rich, and people here, and it's very salty, I guess, and people around here love to put sashimi dip it into this black thick soy sauce and eat it. And the taste of soy sauce differs in there, in each part of Japan. Like if you go to southern side, it will be very sweet, which I love, the Kyushu soy sauce. Mm. Those are great, but people here hate it. People here wants to have like very salty soy sauce, which is bad for if you have a high blood pressure. Mm. But it's a good one. I think it's good for international guests, you know, because as I said in the beginning, a lot of foreigners think that Japanese food doesn't have so much taste. Mm. So tamari shoyu is it's like strong enough for international guests.
Mm. So the full impression from the first taste.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, by the way, there are several types of soy sauce in Japan, and what we normally see as soy sauce is koikuchi shoyu.
Koikuchi, yes.
Right, and it's made up with the equal amount of soybeans and wheat. And I think it's 80% of the more soy sauce in the market. And the uskuchi is also popular, especially in the western part of Japan, like Kyoto. And it is saltier than koikuchi, but the color is less darker than koikuchi to showcase the color of ingredients like kaiseki cuisine. So, yeah, but the tamari, I heard it's only 2% of the total soy sauce in the market in Japan.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's precious.
It's very precious, yes, I should say that. Yes.
Right.
I don't say it's unpopular, but it's a very precious soy sauce. Hi.
Yeah, and if you go to like a good sushi restaurant and the chef really sticks with something, everything's so obsessively high quality and, uniquely maximizing the flavor. And some people, some chefs use the koikuchi, other the tamari for sashimi, for dipping sashimi, because, it has a different flavor profile. Yeah. And also I heard, if you cook tamari soy sauce, it gets beautiful color. So they used for coating rice crackers and those.
Ah, yes, yes.
Right.
Rice crackers should be using tamari.
Yeah, so maybe we are eating more tamari than we realize through rice crackers.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Right. Let's see. So there's another, just for the time, I'll just tell you what it is. Okay, shiro shoyu. The shiro shoyu is another type of soy sauce. And it's only even rarer. It's 1% of the whole soy sauce in the market. But it's it's saltier even. Because it's made with wheat and small amount of soybeans, and just the purpose is to keep the color even lighter. Mm-hmm. It's like not the brown, it's like amber, even whiter than whiskuchi, so that the food looks amazing. And then predominantly they used made with the wheat. That means that the more starch, so it's sweeter because as the starch is converted to sugar.
Right.
So, so it's like sweet and salty and a beautiful color.
It's good you must for be cooking vegetables, right?
That's very uniquely from Aichi, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, I didn't realize until you mentioned that because I thought it was a normal thing for whole Japan, but maybe it's not. The word shiro means white, so. Shiro shoyu is like soy du blanc, very white, like white wine. It looks good, and you'll be amazed if you get used to Japanese food. There are so many flavors are in soy sauce, shoyu sauce. So there are a lot of different brand. And people just want to try out the different shoyu sauce. And perhaps even the ketchup is different from the different brand. Although if you eat in the United States, all of them would be Heinz.
Right. Well, they're more like a Sirkin Jintan or like so many craft ketchups. So that's a really good example.
Yes.
Right. And so the shiro shoyu and the tamari shoyu, they are like kind of the opposite end in terms of ingredients and the color. So tamari is darker and soybean based, and shiro shoyu is wheat based and much whiter. So, and it's interesting, both from one place, Aichi Prefecture. That's very interesting.
It's like yin and yang of Aichi. Positive and negative. Right. We always need that. Yes.
And a strong extreme personalities.
Extreme, yeah. our people are very famous for this extreme character. You know, very quiet or very noisy.
Okay. So, and so of course, because of all the interesting ingredients, Aichi is famous for delicious dishes made with those ingredients, miso and soy sauce. So maybe you can give us some examples.
Okay, like mame miso, a lot of people out of Nagoya, out of Aichi, thinks that Aichi people uses miso in every dish, on the cutlet, the fried cutlet, we put miso, even on the yakitori or any kind of food, if you fry, you put on miso. If you grill, you put on miso. If you boil, like daikon or those kind of vegetables, you put a thick miso. And we love beans. And and there's a sweet called ogura or anko, which is also made of beans, and it's a sweet. It's like a tamale of Mexican food, but extremely sweet. And it's very popular. And people of Aichi use it, eat the most ogura, the bean paste. We even put it on the toast. So I guess we just love thick and rich food. So it's hard to say one example, but miso katsu is very famous, very tasty dish, and I hope if you have a chance, you should really try it.
I heard the sauce. You know, it's a cutlet, but you know the sauce is the hacho miso, that the very umami rich. Mame bean miso and bonito flake based dashi and sugar. So like, who doesn't like it? Fat and sweet and savory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dangerously delicious food.
It is.
Also miso nikomi udon. I heard that's a very famous.
It is famous, but not all of people would love that. You know, I love it, but it's. It's like mega thick miso, and it's sweet. It's not only sweet, you even feel like it's bitter. It's like a black chocolate. And then the men, the noodle is more than al dente, you know. It's very strong. It's like it's very thick and strong, and it's kind of powdery. So people say, like, you have to cook this noodle, please. But it's done, and you eat that. And when you start to like it, you will start to crave on this. It's like, give me miso nikomi. and people eat rice with that. So too much of, like carbo-loading food. You know, like thick noodle with rice and bean, miso. So it's very bad, but it's very fascinating.
Right. Well, bad food tend to taste much, much better than others. So,
yes.
Right. Okay. So, and in Nagoya City, the capital of Aichi, there is a very intriguing custom to serve free breakfast. and yes. that comes with a cup of coffee. And it's called the morning. So what is morning and where the morning service is available and what kind of breakfast is served?
Okay, if you go to a coffee shop, and there's a lot of coffee shop in Nagoya. And I say, like, so many. And in well, recently we're, you know, all of us are used to, like very expensive cafe latte and those kind of, like, good, rich coffee. Before that, 30 years ago, coffee shop means, like, very, like, thin, bad taste coffee that you, it was like a dollar. But Aichi coffee would taste like, cost like maybe $3 with, the morning toast and, boiled egg. That's like basic morning service for the morning menu. And some even comes with more, with like rice and fish and ham and all kind of like oden and big menu for the morning. So some people will just like spend whole a morning till the lunchtime in the coffee shop with. their sweats and, you know, with a family and they just talk. And Nagoya people love to talk in coffee shop all the time. Like if you meet somebody, we go to coffee shop, not for just coffee, but I guess because this is the samurai city and samurai has the custom of drinking tea, green tea, all the time. So maybe it's the tradition to have, it's like British having a tea time.
That's very interesting. You hit a couple of very intriguing points. So yeah, I heard per capita cafe, I mean, the coffee shops are very much more than other cities. And also how they use in Nagoya, instead of going to a meeting room or something, they go to coffee shops.
yes.
Right. And well, maybe that's why the coffee shops can support free breakfast because it's like you go there all the time. So
yeah, there are so many customers. You have to do more. You have to have more service because it's more competitive here.
Yeah, I saw. I looked up and you know over the internet, you can see all those interesting morning menu items. It's really elaborate and expensive looking. And yeah, I heard like a family and the mother would wake up the kid, oh, you have to hurry up because the morning service is going to end unless you get up now.
that kind of thing.
So, and and the samurai, you know, the tea ceremony, sado, was very popular among samurais because it's an occasion for secret conversations. And also, I believe because it's a strong caffeine, they drink it all day to stay alert.
Yes, so. In the beginning it was a medicine. So when tea came from China, it was like very expensive medicine for us.
Right. Okay. And so we discussed earlier that Aichi produced strong samurais, but you know, you're, according to what we discussed, the personality of Nagoya people. So everybody has that kind of like my favorite coffee shop, and this is my place. Is that kind of like a mindset people have?
I guess so. Yeah, people would have like a coffee shop. It's like, you know, some people like know some good bars to be cool. And if you know some like 3 or 4 cool coffee shop, you'll be a cool Nagoya guy.
Wow. Do you have your favorite?
Yeah. I have to. There's a big chain called Komeda. It's more. It's more popular than Starbucks, and it's the wonderful place to spend. And it's a national brand now, so you can find it all over Japan. So Akiko-san, when you come back to Japan, please go to one of Komeda and you will understand.
Okay. it's going to be on my list for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. And also the, you know, I mean, that brings me this question. If mm-hmm. you had 3 days in Aichi, where yes. would you go to experience the best taste of the region?
So the one place you have to go is the castle, Nagoya Castle, which all these three legends spent their times. And then it's one of the biggest castle of Japan. And it's very beautiful. And the deer is walking. And in a place called Ohori, Japanese castle is surrounded by water. But now the water is gone. And I don't know why, but there are a couple of deer is living there. And it's very cute. Mm-hmm. And there's another place called Atsuta Shrine. It's not just a shrine, but it has one of the three treasure of Japanese emperor. And it's called Kusanagi no Tsurugi. It's the mysterious sword. And this sword is the icon of the god of Atsuta. So, which means that it's very important for whole Japanese. It's very calm place to stay, and it's wonderful place. And one more place is called Osu. Osu is like Soho plus Canal Street plus like Little Italy, and then it's like all mashed up, and it's. You know, if you go to Chinatown, you see a lot of strange shops, and it's very noisy. And also, it's that kind of place. So a lot of people think Japanese are modest, quiet, but you will find this all international races are mingled together and very noisy, powerful, energetic. So Osu is the place.
Is it within Nagoya or?
It's in Nagoya. It's in Nagoya, center of Nagoya, right close to the castle. So
okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you walk around and then get tired, you go stop at the coffee shop, maybe Komeda, and drink a cup of coffee. All right. So you work with the local government to promote Aichi Prefecture. So what are your plans?
So what I do is like a dance, kabuki type of dance, which is unique, but also it's very, very unique. It's not so popular anymore. And I thought, how can I contribute to the world? And then because of my bilingual background, I thought I can be a translator. Translator literary of English and Japanese, but also translator of the modern Japan and the classical traditional Japan. So, for examples, I just don't do performance, but I help all kind of performers or presenters who wants to have historical resources. So I work with them and try to consult with them and to make it for modern people. I will be the resource for the classical informations, and for the classical people, I'll be the modern resources like internet and social network and those kind of stuff.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, after watching your video, your yes. performance, I was mm-hmm. refreshed. It's really modern, you know, like the expression. And
thank you.
Right. So I'm so glad that you're doing that. You know, we are planning to do more things to mm-hmm. introduce that unique culture to the world, because it's really refreshing and surprisingly modern.
Yes, so. I guess I learned that from School of Visual Arts in Manhattan because I was studying modern art when I was in college. And if you are in American modern art college, you have to be able to explain about what you do. And I guess those training worked really good on me.
Right. When it comes to traditional whatever, Japanese people tend not to be good at explaining in words.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Right. Okay. So can we find your updates online, social media? Do you have any address or links?
Yes. Our school is called Nishikawa, Nishikawa, and I'm sure you'll see all kind of links. And if you can look at our website, there'll be the link to our social medias. And if you go to YouTube and check with my name, Kazumasa Nishikawa, you will be able to see some of my performances. And some of them are with the English subtitles. So I think it will be helpful to understand. And so please search on that.
Okay. So again, I'll put the link on the show
notes
to that.
That would be YouTube, great help.
Interesting video.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you so much for joining us today, Kazu.
Thank you very much, Akiko.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. My engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.